For the 18th year, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has a new set of members. At a ceremony last night in New York City, new inductees included AC/DC, the Righteous Brothers, and the Police. Also inducted were The Clash in their first year of eligibility, 25 years after releasing their debut recordings.
I'd like to thank the Hall of Fame and accept this honour on behalf of all the garage bands that never may have dreamed of this type of moment. Thank you all.
The Clash singer and leader, Joe Strummer, died in December, but two of the group's founding members were at the induction ceremony and spoke with Ashley Kahn about the event and the enduring rebellious spirit of 77.
London's burning! London's burning!
The Clash were iconoclasts at heart, so it's difficult for guitarist Mick Jones to take their induction all that seriously.
We're going to be abducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then they're going to take us off in a spaceship to Cleveland. It's going to be like Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind.
But he quickly adds that with Joe Strummer only recently departed, the honor is bittersweet.
You know, we're happy to accept these awards and that, but it's tinged with a certain sadness, obviously, because we've lost our colleague who was so important to us, you know, and we miss him so much.
Suddenly, it is Clash tribute season. In addition to their Hall of Fame induction, there's the DVD release of the Clash documentary, Westway to the World. And then there was the four-guitar salute at the Grammys featuring Bruce Springsteen, Elvis Costello, Stevie Van Zandt, and Dave Grohl, all performing the Clash anthem, London Calling. It makes one nostalgic for 1977 when the four young musicians blasted out of London's punk rock scene, delivering songs with brash attitude and sharp social commentary. Songs like White Riot, I'm So Bored with the USA, and 1977. Bassist Paul Simonon recalls that in 1977, England was suffering from one economic crisis after another.
You know, the country was falling apart. You know, they had three-day weeks, you had strikes. For a young person, there was no future, as the song goes, you know.
But the adverse conditions helped draw the Clash together.
The TV finished at 11 o'clock, the pubs closed at 11 o'clock. It was like them telling you when you go to bed and when to wake up. And it really seemed that's how the world was. You know, it did seem very grey and black and white, you know. And so we sort of, I suppose, just naturally reacted to that and got creative, really.
Though powered by the same anger and rebellious spirit that fueled other punk bands, The Clash stood for something different.
I think we had a very positive message in a time when it was like nihilistic, you know what I mean? It was about destroying, but we were never really about destroying. We were the antithesis of that. We were about creating. And so we had this band, the Sex Pistols, that was very important and that influenced us, but they kind of burnt out really quickly. Their byword was destroy.
We were the other side of the coin,
we
really.
We were the other side of the coin, and we flipped it. Side. And it was like we had a really positive, egalitarian message for everybody.
Mick Jones remembers an early incident in Scotland that paints a telling picture of the Clash and their principles. Unbeknownst to the group, their scheduled performance at a university was only open to students. Joe Strummer decided to get personally involved.
We were playing in Glasgow, and we were doing a record signing, and then this guy came up on a scooter and he said, "Joe, I've just been to the gig and they wouldn't let me have a ticket because I'm not a student." And he said, "Right," and he got on the back of the scooter and they went to the gig and tried to buy a ticket and they said, "You can't buy a ticket
if you're not a student
and he said, "Right, well, the gig's off then."
The box office immediately changed their tune, and it's a populist philosophy that the Clash embraces to this day. Though proud to enter the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the group chose not to perform at an event that was closed to the public.
I think it's the wrong context. I didn't feel that being a right place for the Clash to play together.
But I thought we could work something out.
And I thought we couldn't.
Clash effectively disbanded in 1985, but in their 7 short years together they created music and an outspoken, socially committed role that continues to shape rock groups to this day. When the Clash were at their height, even their love songs, sung over reggae rhythms or machine gun beats, sounded like rallying cries, more political than personal.
Ashley Kahn is a journalist and author of the recent book, A Love Supreme, the story of John Coltrane's signature album. The Essential Clash, a double CD overview of the group's music, is released today. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.